Random House Audio presents Obsession by Jonathan Kellerman. Read for you by John Rubenstein. Patty Bigelow hated surprises and did her best to avoid them. God had other ideas. Patty's concept of a supreme being wavered between ho-ho-ho Santa and a fire-eyed Odin thrusting thunderbolts. Either way, a white-bearded guy bunking down in the clouds, depending on his mood, dispensing goodies or playing marbles with the planets. If pressed, Patty would have called herself an agnostic. But when life went haywire, why not be like everyone else and blame a greater power? The night Lydia surprised her, Patty had been home for a couple of hours, trying to wind down after a tough day in the ER, mellowing out with a beer, then another, and when that didn't work, giving in to the urge. First, she straightened the apartment, doing stuff that didn't need doing. She ended up using a toothbrush on the kitchen counter grout, cleaned the toothbrush with a wire brush that she washed under hot water, and picked clean. Still tense, she saved the best for last, arranging her shoes, wiping each loafer, sneaker, and sandal clean with a chamois, sorting and resorting by color, making sure everything pointed outward at precisely the same angle. Time for blouses and sweaters. The doorbell rang. 1:20 a.m. in Hollywood. Who the heck would be dropping in? Patty got irritated, then nervous. Should have bought that gun. She took a carving knife to the door, made sure to use the peephole. Saw black sky. No one out there. Oh, yes, there was. When she realized what Lydia had done, she stood there, too stunned to blame anyone. Lydia Bigelow Narduli Soames Biefenbach was Patty's baby sister, but she'd crammed a lot more living into her 35 years than Patty wanted to think about. Dropout years, groupie years, barmaid years, sitting on back of the Harley years. Vegas, Miami, San Antonio, Fresno, Mexico, New Mexico, Wyoming, Montana. No time for postcards or sisterly calls. The only time Patty heard from Liddy had to do with money. Lydia was quick to point out that her arrests were chicken shit, nothing that ever stuck. Responding to Patty's silence when she collect-called from some backcountry lockup and wheedled bail money. She always paid the money back, Patty granted her that. Always the same schedule, 6 months later to the day. Liddy could be efficient when she wanted to, but not when it came to men. Before, in between, and after the three stupid marriages flowed an endless parade of pierced, inked, dirty fingernailed, vacant-eyed losers who Liddy insisted on calling her honeys. All that fooling around, but miraculously, only one kid. 3 years ago, Lydia taking 23 hours to push the baby out, alone in some osteopathic hospital outside of Missoula. Tanya Marie, 5 pounds, 6 ounces. Liddy sent Patty a newborn picture, and Patty sent money. Most newborns were red and monkey-like, but this kid looked pretty cute. 2 years later, Lydia and Tanya showed up at Patty's door, dropping in on the way to Alaska. No talk about why Juno, were they meeting anyone, no hints about who the father was. Patty wondered if Lydia even knew. Patty was no kid person, and her neck got tight when she saw the toddler holding Liddy's hand, expecting some wild little brat given the circumstances. Her niece turned out to be sweet and quiet, kind of pretty with wispy white blonde hair, searching green eyes that would have fit a middle-aged woman, and restless hands. Drop-in stretched to a 10-day stay. Patty ended up deciding Tanya was real cute, not much of a pain if you didn't count the stink of dirty diapers. Just as suddenly as she'd shown up, Liddy announced they were leaving. Patty was relieved but also disappointed. "You did okay, Lid. She's a real little lady." Standing in her front door, watching as Lydia dragged the kid out with one hand, toted a battered suitcase with the other. A yellow cab idled at the curb, belching smog. Lydia flipped her hair and grinned.
A lady? Meaning not like me, Pets?
Oh, stop. Take it for what it was, said Patty.
Hey, said Lydia, I'm a slut and proud of it.
All I meant to say was she's great. You can bring her any time. Smiling at Tanya, she bent a bit and talked softly.
You're a good girl. A real little lady.
Tanya laced her hands in front of her and mustered up the most painful little smile Patty had ever seen.
What's in Juno?
Patty asked Lydia.
Snow?
Lydia laughed and her boobs bounced, barely restrained by a hot pink halter top.
Stay warm, she said. Oh, yeah, said Lydia. I got my ways for that.
Taking hold of the little girl's wrist and pulling her toward the car. Patty went after them, bent to get eye level with the kid as Lydia handed the suitcase off to the cabbie.
Nice to meet you, little Tanya.
That sounded awkward. What did she know about kids? Tanya bit her lip, chewed hard. Now, here it was 13 months later, and the kid was back at her door, tiny as ever, wearing saggy jeans and a frayed white top. This time she stared straight up at Patty. A rumbling red Firebird was parked exactly where the cab had been. The hood thumped like a fibrillating heart. As Patty hurried toward the car, the Firebird peeled out, Lydia's platinum shag barely visible through the tinted glass on the passenger side. Patty thought her sister had waved, but she was never really sure. The kid hadn't moved. When Patty got back to her, Tanya reached in a pocket and held out a note, cheap white paper. Patty took Tanya's hand and read the note. Dear Big Sis, you said she was a lady. Maybe with you, she can really turn out to be one. Little Sis.
Not a whodunit, said Milo. Did it even happen?
I said, you think it's a waste of time.
Don't you?
I shrugged. We both drank.
We're talking terminal illness, probably went to a brain, he said. That's a mere layman's theory.
1:30 p.m., a cool Wednesday afternoon. We were at a steakhouse a couple miles west of downtown, facing up to massive T-bones, salads bigger than some people's lawns, icy martinis. At 9:30 that morning, I'd been working a crossword puzzle when Tanya Bigelow phoned to tell me her mother had died of cancer a month ago and she wanted a session. It had been years since I'd seen her or her mother.
I'm so sorry, Tanya. I can see you today.
Thank you, Dr. Delaware.
Her voice caught. Is there anything you want to tell me now?
Not really. It's not about grief. It's something... I'm sure you'll think it's strange.
I waited. She told me some of it.
You probably think I'm obsessing.
Not at all, I said, lying in the service of therapy.
I'm really not, Dr. Delaware. Mommy wouldn't have... Sorry, I have to run to class. Can you see me later this afternoon?
How about 5:30?
Thank you so much, Dr. Delaware. Mom always respected you.
Milo sawed along the bone.
Sad about Patty, he said.
You knew her?
Used to see her in the ER when I dropped in on Rick. Hi, how's it going? Have a nice day.
Did you know she was sick?
Only way I'd know was if Rick told me. And we've got a new rule. No business talk after hours.
When cases are open, a homicide detective's hours never end. Rick Silverman works the ER at Cedars for long stretches. The two of them talk about boundaries all the time, but their plans die young. I said, so you have no idea if she was still working with Rick?
Same answer. Confessing some terrible thing that she did, huh? Makes no sense, Alex. Why would the kid want to dredge stuff up about a mother?
Because the kid gets hold of something and doesn't let go. Good question, I said.
When did you treat her?
First time was 12 years ago. She was 7.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?